Hello, my fine friends. Happy New Year. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with Adam Stoker.
Stuart, I am so excited to be here. And you know, usually it's me trying to one-up the previous episode, but I'm really excited today because I get on a plane in the morning to go to Maui without the kids for a week, just me and my wife, and I cannot wait.
That's good. And you do this most years, right? You'll take a trip with the missus on your own and neglect your children for a week. And
that's exactly
it's great
right.
Parenting. Amazing.
The point is to neglect the children. That's the purpose of the trip. That's the reason for the trip. And we do a great job of it.
That's good. You know, we've always had a sort of running joke that's true in our house, where I always tell the kids that I love mommy most and then them second. Because like I believe like the strong foundation of the partnership is what creates a stable family unit and nurtures the children the best. So we sort of do the same thing as you. We neglect our children as well. So congrats. But I do have to put in an official violation because, you know, when we started this project, I did say that you cannot have any hats that promote other destinations. And there you are wearing your Maui hat. So I was going to start and introduce a new segment to this show. It was going to be Adam's spit check that we were going to do every episode just to see what hat you have on. Because I know, is that a new hat, by the way?
You know what? It was a Christmas present from Jamie, my wife. And it was because we're leaving for Hawaii. She wanted to give me a couple of Hawaii hats.
Well, good for her. She knows you well. I mean, the hat is the way to your heart, as we know. I think
absolutely.
I've only seen you in a photograph once not wearing a hat. And that was a Christmas card. And even this year, you managed to squeeze the hat into the family Christmas picture. So,
I finally just said to her, look, I wear a hat all the time. And so why in family pictures would I look different than I do every single day? And she's like, well, you're right. You are ugly or bald. So yeah, wear a hat. And it worked out.
Well, I'm glad we checked in on Adam's relationship with his wife. So let's move into Destination Discourse, shall we? So this is a New Year's show. And I know every year on your podcast, the Destination Marketing podcast, that you do your New Year's resolution. So I sort of wanted to give the audience an opportunity to hear more of a discussion around that, because usually it's you talking and saying what your resolutions are or predictions. And so we're going to go through those today, and I'm going to try to be a little devil's advocate where I can. It's hard because I agree with a lot of them, but let's sort of poke around and see. I will say, and you've commented on this too, I think you're ruffling some feathers in the industry, man. I think that you know, I don't know if it's the courage that I've given you through this platform of Destination Discourse, but you're out there a little bit more this year, and you're making some bold predictions that maybe aren't in the interest of some of the established powerhouses that are in the industry. So I've seen you're maybe getting a little more attention this year on some of these things. So I'm excited to dig into that. But
yeah,
before we do, I do want to warn the folks listening and watching this that this is going to be gratuitously the Adam show today. So I fully understand that if you want to turn off and tune into next week's episode, because it's going to be way better. We've got Devin Whitmire with SCPRT, and she's way better to listen to than Adam is. But today's episode is going to be all about Adam, you know, because he demanded that in his contract. You know, he wanted green M&Ms, and he wanted nothing but one, at least a minimum of one episode a year that was dedicated to him. So we figured we'd get it out of the way. So
I'm a tough negotiator.
This is right. So this is the segment that everyone's been waiting for. It's the number one segment in all of Destination Marketing. Nay, all of media. It is Stu's News. But today happens to be some big news from you, Adam, if you want to share with the audience.
Yeah, it's something that I've been working on for a really long time, and really proud of what we've done here. And that's that as we've been in the destination marketing space, we entered the space as what I would consider a more traditional advertising agency, right? And Relic has been a great agency for the last many years. And what a lot of people don't know that listen to my show is that in 2020, I actually, with my partners, purchased another advertising agency that was not tourism related called EKR. And I had this bright idea, which again, you know, I feel like my career is a little bit of a combination of ambition and ignorance. And this was much more on the ignorance side, this belief that I could take two agencies that were separate agencies and during COVID, November of 2020, blend two cultures while everyone's working from home. The owners of the previous agency walked away day one. And it was a really challenging time. And since then, I've been trying to run two separate brands. And so I combine the challenge of running two separate brands with the fact that I've seen a major, major change in consumer behavior, a major change in what makes marketing successful. And it's led me to the point where I felt like we had to not only change the entire structure of our organization, but also rebrand and bring these two agencies together in one operational team with joint accounting, joint finances, and really focus on helping organizations build communities through content. And we believe wholeheartedly that this is the way that organizations are going to be successful for the long term, is if they build communities through content. And so we rebranded our agency to Brand Revolt. I'm wearing the shirt here. You said the fit check, right? So Brand Revolt is a revolt against complacency, really. And I believe that there is this sea of sameness in the marketing world that every marketer needs to figure out how to get out of. And so we want people to join this revolt against the sea of sameness and focus on building long-term sustainable communities through content instead of just this endless paid media-centric strategy that I believe is plaguing the industry today.
So to summarize, you're telling the audience that Adam Stoker is revolting. Is that what I'm hearing?
Listen, after all these years...
You can take that whichever way you want.
Yep. After all these years of being told that I'm revolting, I'm finally leaning in.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this is, I mean, congrats, right? I think this is a big step forward for you and your whole team. And we've enjoyed working with everyone over the last couple of years now. And you certainly have the expertise in this field. And it's something that isn't new, right? You and I talked about this on your show 2.5 years ago, I think now, maybe a year and a half. No, 2.5 years ago, we sort of, when we first crossed paths and had a 6-part series talking about owned media and why paid media is maybe not going to hang around for the long haul. And I've never been more confident of that truth. I think if we see the continuation of the fragmentation of media consumption, the rejection of traditional advertising, it's inevitable. We've all got to become content creators. And the only way we can be successful with that is by having an audience and so building communities around whether it's interests or topics or content, I think it's smart and differentiates you guys in the industry and maybe gives you the opportunity to partner with some of the big guys in a way that you haven't in the past, right? Because historically Relic would have been perceived as a threat or a competitor to some of these big guys. But now I think it gives you a unique angle. So congrats. That's awesome.
Yeah.
We always
thank
knew you were gonna be revolting. So,
well, you know, I try not to be too nice to you on this show, Stuart, but I am going to tell you and share a little story with the audience that, you know, several years ago, I guess it was probably close to 3 years ago now, we had started working together and I was just starting to kind of toy with this idea of pivoting into using content to build communities. And I actually called you and we had become friends at that time. I thought so. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong today.
The jury is still out. Yeah.
I called you and I just said, hey, I want some advice. I'm thinking about going this direction with my agency and really focusing on helping destinations build communities through content. What do you think? And you told me you thought it was a great idea. You thought it was a good direction to go, and it was a great differentiator from other agencies in the space. And then a couple of weeks later, you actually called me and said, hey, we want to give you a shot, basically, to take this philosophy that you have and take over that portion of the work that we do. And we, of course, bid for it, put together a plan, and we're able to do that. And really, you have allowed us to pioneer a lot of the hypotheses that we've had with your team, and your team's been incredible to work with. So I just want you to know, we wouldn't be executing on the rebrand in the way that we are without you and your team having confidence in our ability to do so. And I'm really grateful for that.
You're very welcome. I'm going to try not to get too mushy about it, but I do I value the team. We joke a lot on this show, but I think that the work you guys done around some of our brands, whether it's been our podcasts or most recently with Traveling the Spectrum, now streaming on Peacock,
That's right.
then yeah, you done a really good job, and you've earned the right to continue to do that with our organization. So hopefully, more DMOs will pick up the banner and start to run in the same direction that we are. And I think content has been king for a long time. The types of content that DMOs now have permission to create, I think, has been influenced by us and by you. And I think it's raised the bar tremendously. And so I'm excited to see what the next wave of DMOs do in this space. So congrats to Brand Revolt. We're big supporters.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, so enough about Adam. Let's shift to talk about Adam. So if you don't listen to Adam's other podcast, the Destination Marketing Podcast, it's one of the better ones in the industry for sure. It's one of the first ones I found when I came to this industry. If you're new to the DMO industry, I think it's a must listen to, and go back and listen to really smart people, not Adam, but his guests, about really cool, smart things along the way. Last week's episode was really cool because it was like a culmination of things for me, because when I first joined the industry, and I mentioned this last week, the two podcasts that I really resonated with the most were Bill Geist's and yours. And to have you both on this show was just a privilege and an honor. And so it was really cool content too. So if you haven't listened to last week's episode with Bill Geist, definitely go check that out. But every year you do this episode where you talk about your resolutions. And so we're gonna pick through those today. We're gonna poke holes in them or agree. We'll try to disagree where we can, although that might be a little difficult. But I'm just gonna hand it to you, Adam. How many you have? You have, was it five, six, seven,
I've
12?
got six. One of
Six,
them's a
okay.
little more self-serving. The rest of them are really more high level on what I believe every destination marketer needs to
Yeah,
do.
we already did the self-serving part of this episode. So you gotta move past that. So five, maybe six. It depends how grumpy I am by the end of number five. But let's jump right in with number one. What's
Let's do
your
it.
number one resolution?
So number one is just in watching over the last, man, at this point, 12 years, how destination marketers approach marketing in general. I really believe that one of the major issues that we have is we look at our budgets as annual budgets. And of course, we're funded annually, and that comes from whether it's the municipality that we're with or the county or however we're funded. Those budgets are funded annually. And so what it causes is destination marketers to build annual plans that don't necessarily have the same carryover that an organization that has kind of perpetual funding would have. And so what I mean by that is we have most destinations, and of course there's some that are doing a great job of avoiding this, but most destinations are coming up with like, what's our catchy headline for the year that everything will roll off of? What imagery are we going to use? And a call to action that is some variation of book your stay today. And that result is that every year we start at zero because every plan is an annual plan. And I believe destinations need to take on more projects that transcend annual plans, and maybe it's a 3 to 5 year initiative. And I quote you a little bit in this one and say that we should be cathedral builders. And you talk a lot about cathedral building, and that's where I really believe that instead of looking at what are we going to do this year, it's what are we going to do that's going to impact the community for the long term. The people that worked on the cathedrals in Europe, a lot of them weren't even there to see the completion of the work, weren't there to see the amazing impact of what they had done, but it didn't change their approach, their attention to detail, their dedication to the craft. And I think destinations need to be cathedral builders. Look at your marketing budget as a vehicle for long-term impact, and don't just focus on what's happening for the next 12 months.
Yeah, so I'm going to agree with you first, and then I'm going to tell you why it's problematic. Because you're right, we are cathedral thinkers here. This is not a phrase we coined. It's been used in the industry prior to my arrival. It's a term that dates back to medieval times, right? It was literally used to, as an analogy, but when people would build these big, beautiful cathedrals over generations. And so the concept from our perspective is to have a vision that may take longer than your current administration to fulfill, right? It could be years, it could be decades potentially, and it's certainly multiple budgets. But that if you have a vision for what it is, and that your understanding of the strategy behind that is not gonna change, then you can start today building the foundational bricks for that, right? In knowing that you're not gonna get to the finish line in year one, but do you have a plan to get to year five or year 10, and it starts with year one, and you know what your milestones are in year one. So that's how we've built projects like Traveling the Spectrum. It wasn't a one-year project, it was a three-year project. We had to fund it over three separate years. We've done things like building a customer data platform, a CDP. That wasn't a one-year project. We're 3 years in, and we're probably 50% of the way to where I'm going to be satisfied that it's functioning the way I want to. And it's cost, you know, investment over those years. And so what you have to do is envision the Shangri-La, right? This beautiful cathedral that is going to be what you want to build, and take your ego out of it and say, I may not be the person that gets there, but if the blueprint is created now and we all agree on that blueprint, and that doesn't really change too much, the intricacies can, the fixtures and fittings can change, but the vision of what it is and why it exists is not going to change. We'll reevaluate if we need to, but for the most part, it's not going to change. What are the foundational bricks we build today, or we need to build today, that will help us get there the most effectively and most efficiently? So we do that. There are other places that have done this, and not just on the DMO side, but at a destination. I'd say our neighbors in Greenville, South Carolina, their mayor, who's been there for a couple of decades now, he had a vision for what Greenville could become. And 20 plus years ago, it was downtown Greenville was not a place you wanted to hang out, right? And he had this vision that, hey, we're going to knock down this road that runs right through the center, and we're going to show people this beautiful waterfall that sits under here, and we're going to build a city around this waterfall. And everyone thought he was crazy at the time. And here we are 20 years later. It's one of the best places to visit for a weekend getaway or whatever. And so, but he had a lot of naysayers at the time, a lot of people saying, this is a bad idea. What are you doing? You're going backwards. And sometimes you do have to go backwards before you go forwards, and deconstruct before you can construct, right? You have to bulldoze the old to come up with the new. And so, I agree with you that the cathedral thinking is something we adopt here. Now, playing devil's advocate, we're in a tough situation as DMOs because we're beholden to results. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of accountability, both from a reporting accountability perspective, but also from an optics perspective, the court of public opinion that we've talked a lot about on this show. And so, when you're building something long-term, you don't always reap the rewards. Like, look at our CDP. Year one, we were building infrastructure. Year two, we were collecting data. It wasn't until year three that we actually started yielding positive results. So we'd invested budget over 2 years, and it hadn't benefited us at all, right? And so to be able to justify that to your stakeholders and to show that that's a worthwhile investment on your accountability reports is really, really difficult. So you have to think a little differently. You have to be committed, but you also have to lay the foundational groundwork and education on the front side to your board of directors, to your local municipalities, to people to say, here's what we want to do and why we want to do it and where it's going to get us to. But it's going to take some time, and we got to be patient in the short term. But I don't know that many DMOs have the latitude to be able to do that. I was in a very unique situation because I was on the board of directors before I became an employee here. And so they were my peers, and they trusted me, and they said, you know, we're not quite sure what a CDP is, but it sounds like you know what you're doing. And so we're going to leave you alone for a couple of years, but we want to see results. And in an industry where results are everything, you know, the optics, the perception of results are everything, it's really hard to take the risk on something that may or may not pay dividends down the road.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I see where you're coming from. There's a couple of counterpoints that I'll give you here. Number one is, as I look at most destinations, you said that not everybody's in a position to do this. I would change your vernacular a little bit and say not everybody is willing to do this. And the reason is, and a lot of these resolutions that I include today kind of tie together, because one of the things that you need, and you mentioned this with Greenville's mayor, Greenville's mayor was not the DMO leader of the destination. You need a coalition of cathedral thinkers if you want to actually make this long-term impact, right? And so the idea that the mayor was on board with a long-term vision for the community, I think you need to fill your board with cathedral thinkers and not people that are transactional thinkers. And so if you're a cathedral thinker stuck in a destination where you don't think your ideas are going to be approved, the first step is to create a coalition of cathedral thinkers that can work together to get it done. And so it's not that people can't do it. It's that it's a lot of work to set the table correctly so that you're capable of building for the long term. And I totally understand that there's barriers, but the result will be if you don't change the way you're building your marketing plan for the long term, the result will be short-term transactional impact where we have to start again at zero next year. So it just depends on how long you want to be doing it that way.
Yeah. So to the folks listening, I think if there are big audacious projects that you want to tackle, and you're just like they're too big for us. We cannot do it. We don't have the budget to do it. Let's say accessibility. We really want to tackle accessibility in a destination. It's probably going to cost us. I'm making up numbers, right? It's going to cost us $200,000 to do it. We can't invest $200,000 to do this. But you know what you can do is say, okay. What's that vision from an accessibility standpoint? Like, what do we want to be as a destination in terms of welcoming people with disabilities? What types of disabilities do we want to focus on? What are we going to need in terms of integration within a community from restaurants and attractions and accommodations and other resources and stakeholders? And map it out, like draw out this sort of utopian future. That don't worry about the timeline at this point. Just sort of draw it out and say, okay, let me step back. Like, what's the first step on this path to building this? What are the first foundational bricks? Now, can I budget $20,000 this year or $10,000 this year and put someone, a resource in charge of shepherding this project? Because that's the hardest part, right? Is getting started and having resources dedicated, both money and time dedicated to it. And then to your
Can I
point, I
stop you just
think
real quick, Stuart, on what you're
absolutely.
saying there? Like the thing that you said that's so great there is you think for the long term and then you invest in your short-term budget the portion of it that needs to go to this long-term initiative. And so many people say, oh, well, we can't do that because that would be too much. It would take too much of our budget. Well, yeah, you're right. If you try to do it all in 1 year, yes, it's too much. So, how do you invest small pieces of your budget over time into these big picture activities? I think you're spot on.
Yeah, it's that old adage, right? How do you eat a cathedral? Like one bite at a time. So mixing metaphors, obviously, from elephants and cathedrals. I thought it was funny, but I mean, you got to start somewhere. And to finish the thought, I think that your mention of community involvement and coalitions, there's nothing we do that impacts the community where we shouldn't be engaged with other stakeholders in that community. There are organizations that have vested interests in whatever the project is you're doing. And if we can all take our ego out of it and stop worrying about who takes credit, and we just all find alignment through conversation and collaboration, your destination is going to move a lot faster in with forward progress. And so that, yeah, I think we ended up sort of agreeing, even though I think there's some cautionary words along the way.
Yeah, it was a great try at disagreeing there,
Yeah,
Stuart.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to disagree. We're too aligned in a lot of things. I'll find a way, place where I completely disagree, even if it's just for fun. So what's
Okay.
number two, Adam?
Number two is decrease your dependence on paid media. And you know, it's funny because you mentioned I might be ruffling some feathers. I've actually made a post about this specific resolution on my LinkedIn page, and I had several people comment and disagree with me. The problem was each of the people who disagreed with me on my LinkedIn post were traditional media salespeople and representatives. And it's like, okay, well, you have a vested interest in my opinion being wrong on this. And the reason I think that destinations need to decrease their dependence on paid media is because every year the cost of paid media is going up. And you and I actually talked about this with Zeke Coleman in our episode where we talked about the scary part of conflating correlation and causation, is that if the cost of paid media is going up and up and up, and you are using a lot of the metrics that you're getting from, let's say, a Zartico or a Tourism Economics or some of these other platforms that are meant to provide attribution data, the scary part is you're over attributing value to your paid media, because that's what proves that what the choices that you made that year were correct. But at some point that bubble is going to burst. And I'm really nervous about if we're entirely dependent on paid media, the cost is going up and up and up, but the cost to acquire a customer is also going up and up and up. At some point, it's fiscally irresponsible to do so. So how can you control your own destiny? It's building your own community. And that's where I think a lot of destinations need to be diverting their funds instead of just saying, okay, well, Google pay-per-click is going to be there forever, so we'll just run pay-per-click till the end of time. Or, you know, same with Meta and TikTok and other platforms like that. So makes me nervous the level of dependence that destinations have on paid media.
Yeah. So I'll put it in context with us. I mean, we try to spend about 80% of our budget, our media budget, on paid advertising, about 10% on earned media, and about 10% on owned media. That's where we are right now. And that's not really shifted much in the last couple of years, but a point here or there, right? And I'm talking sort of rough numbers. And the reason we're like where we are is because paid media is the most measurable. Right. And mm-hmm. although I think people do overinflate the results in confused causation and correlation, I think relative to owned and earned media, it's still the most measurable. Right. And so I think that's therein lies the rub with DMOs. And so I think it's philosophically correct to say reduce your reliance on paid media. It's really, really difficult in practice, even for us. Right. And we're sort of pushing the boundaries with some of our owned media assets, but we're still very cautious. We're still only spending 10% of our budget on owned media projects. And I'm reluctant to go higher than that until we can prove the ROI, because we've done some great things. We've gotten some good viewership, but we still, there are gaps in tying that back to visitation and ROI, which don't exist. There are gaps in paid media, but they're not as big gaps, and they're a little more manageable, right? So I think it's really hard for DMOs to take the leap of faith, which is why we sort of hedge a little bit, and we've just done this 80-10-10 sort of rule. So I agree with you philosophically. I just think it's hard in practice to take the leap.
It is hard. And nothing that I, so all of these New Year's resolutions, I want to go ahead and say none of these are easy. And in no way do I believe that it's going to be just a simple thing. You flip a switch and all these things change. It doesn't change the necessity of it. And so going back to what you said about, you know, how you guys have invested 10% in owned media, let's use traveling the spectrum as an example, because it's taken you now to this point, to get to the point where Peacock is running traveling the spectrum. What are we, 2 years in to this project?
Really three since the concept. Yes, 3 years from the idea.
Mm-hmm. 3 years in. But now, after 3 years of work, this show is available on Peacock to millions of people across the country, right? And mm-hmm. and hopefully we'll get international pickup on this as well. But to get that kind of distribution through paid media, you would have had to spend way more than you spent on getting this project up to the point that it is. And so while it's a longer-term project, there are longer term returns as well by going through this process. So I know it's hard, but and by the way, traveling the spectrum is an outlier now. I hope that for the long term, it won't be an outlier. It'll be one of many amazing projects like that. But I think the impact, if you're able to successfully do that, can eclipse what you're capable of achieving with paid media.
Yeah, it can, right? Philosophically, again, and theoretically, I think you're right, but it's a lot of things had to go right for us to get to that point, right? We had a lot of no's before we got a yes from Peacock. It really took persistence and really stubbornness from me to say, no, we're not going to settle on this. We're not going to just distribute this like we have other content in the past. We're going to find the right home for it. And we waited, 18 months to find the right home for it. So I don't know that every DMO is going to have the patience to do that until there's better metrics. And I know there's folks out there. I know Ryan Thompson with Miles worked on a project a couple of years ago with some folks to try to put a dollar value for, a second or a minute of video viewership and things like that. So I think we as an industry need to come together and sort of figure out other metrics that we can measure, that we can come up with some standards that are defensible. Because I think that's the challenge right now for DMOs is if you can't defend the work you're doing through results, then you're going to get criticized and potentially defunded, right? And so I think we as an industry have some work to do there before we can really say, let's pull back on paid media. I think we need to better understand the value of owned media and earned media in a way that we can communicate to our stakeholders. So I would say maybe there's some groundwork we need to do together.
Well, absolutely. And we actually within our organization are working on a product to help do that, but it's going to take us some time. that was all me right. Saying it's not done. It's not ready, but we're working on it.
But I think it can't be one entity either, right? I think it has to be. I think it has to be a universally agreed or enough people, a critical mass of folks, to agree that this is a defensible position for it to be something that I can stand behind. You know, go up in front of a city council and say, "Hey, this authority says this," right? It's like our Longwood's ROI study or stuff tourism economics does, right? It's codified and it's been sustained over a long time and it's been defended. And so I think we need that on owned media community. You know, if we're building an audience or a community, what's the value of that, right? Back in the day, we used to put a dollar value or initially a cents and then a dollar value on an email address sign up. And how do we do that for video viewership or size of a community on a social platform or things like that? So I think we got some work to do. So what's number three, Adam Stoker?
So prepare for DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency. And that doesn't necessarily mean that I believe that Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy are going to show up at your little DMO, wherever you are in the country, and start going through your books. That's not what I mean. And we talked about this on another episode. What is acceptable publicly to say has changed over the last year. And it is now publicly acceptable to question deeply the funding the use of government dollars. And unfortunately, even though I believe that destination marketing is a self-sustained vehicle because the tourism tax in most cases is funding destinations, communities are still going to look at that as government funding. It's tax-based funding, right? And so because of that and because of the way what's publicly acceptable has changed, I think we are in for a wave, community by community, of people who are starting to look at the line item on the funding that goes to a DMO and say, wait a second, what is this massive line item and how's it being used? And if a destination has been doing the same thing the same way, because that's the way it's always been done, and the community comes out in this way, I think we're in for a lot of pain and just trouble in the industry. I actually think it could result in a lot of DMOs getting defunded if they don't get in front of it proactively. And that's what I mean by prepare for DOGE, because this wave is coming, and every DMO, if they start now, has the ability to prepare for it and have really good answers and coalitions within the community to be prepared to defend against it.
Yeah. This is one we discussed at length in episode 11. So if you haven't listened to episode 11 with Will Seckham, go back and listen to that. But yeah, so I'll do what I've been doing, which is I'll agree and then sort of pick a little bit at it. But I agree in that there's a shift in what's acceptable to say in society. I agree that there's going to be momentum behind the concept of folks have overspent, especially governmental agencies have overspent, and we want to be more fiscally responsible. And I think that's going to be exacerbated in states that are maybe more red states, right? So I think, somewhere like South Carolina that is more right leaning is probably going to be more aggressive than California and some of this stuff. But
Yeah.
we talked about this last week with Bill Geist about the situation in Duluth and how they got completely gutted as a DMO. They were closed basically, other than a couple of sales folks, because the community and in this case the mayor didn't understand that the DMO was more than an ad agency. And so I think for us to go on the offensive now, it's imperative that we tell our community that we are more than an ad agency, that we provide community value, and that we are an important part of driving the quality of life for the residents of the community. And so I think that's the way you can insulate yourself. So I do think it's a potential threat, but I think the savvy DMOs are already showing their value. They're already integrated in the community. They're already doing the things they need to do to not be questioned. And this sort of ties to your last point, right? So I think it's hard to make a decision to drop paid media, which is measurable and has an ROI, now and go to something more speculative like owned media, which has more risk inherently, when you're going to be under more scrutiny than ever before. So it's something we're thinking about internally, but it's not something that I would say is keeping us up at night in general. I think it's something that we feel like we're in good position. We've done the groundwork, and if you're a DMO that hasn't done the groundwork, then maybe you're in a little more trouble. But Doge is going to shift I think the zeitgeist, the way we think about government, is going to shift over the next 12 months.
I do think, Stuart, you may have a little bit of your Myrtle Beach glasses on this one, because I think there's fewer destinations that you think that or than you think that are insulated against what might be coming. I think there's a lot of, especially smaller DMOs that don't have very much funding. What happens in those destinations is they get a lot of community pushback, and I know you're aware of this, so I'm not trying to pretend
Right.
you don't know. But I think there's a lot of people that, because of the environment that they're in and the people that are around them, they've had to do things the way they've always been done, because that's how the political stakeholder wants it, or that's how this hotelier that's been on the board for 15 years wants it, or whatever the situation. I think there's a lot of people that if they don't start proactively preparing for the possible community pushback that's coming, I think it's going to be a real rough road.
Yeah, that's fair. All righty, what's number, what are we on, number four now?
Yeah, and this one ties into the prepare for Doge, and that's where, I've seen now at this point hundreds of target personas for destinations, and this is where they do kind of the oh gosh, the avatar of their ideal visitor, or maybe their top four ideal visitors, right? And as I've seen that, I don't think I've ever seen a fleshed out target persona for your local stakeholders, residents, and political figures. And I think because of what we just talked about with Doge, I think it's time for a more intentional community involvement effort from the marketing side, where just like we have a map of, okay, these messages will reach the young married travelers, and this is the income band that they're in, and here's the challenges that they deal with. So these are the buzzwords that you have to say in order for them to want to travel here. You need to go through that same exercise with your residents. What keeps them up at night? What are they struggling with? What interests do they have? And communicate as a DMO as if they're one of the groups that you desperately want to build a relationship with. Because if you, and desperately might not be the word, but if you build that relationship, you'll have the coalition, you'll have the supporters if some of the pains that we've talked about earlier come. And it'll help you also be a cathedral builder, because you'll have those advocates throughout the community. So I just think it's time to, if you have target personas as a marketing team, you need to add local community personas and have an intentional communication strategy directly to them. And earned media, in a lot of cases, may be your best vehicle to do that, because the local radio station and newspaper and whatever other media outlets are there are very likely to promote your message if you treat them like a valued partner.
Yeah. Yeah, this is one that we think about a lot in Myrtle Beach. It's you know, again, going back to the fundamentals of why do we exist as a DMO? Our mission is to promote, protect, and improve the community. And we're a chamber and a CVB, so it's slightly different to different organizations. But I believe our primary purpose is to improve the quality of life for the residents and the whole community, the business community, and everyone that lives and enjoys that area. And so if we do that through the tourism community, and we do talk to the visitors, although in a second I'm going to go off on a tangent because I don't think we think about the visitors the right way. But we have to have a finger on the pulse of what's going on in our community. Bill Geist talks a lot about community shared value, right? It's why we have to select the right board of directors. These have to be influential people that have their finger on the pulse of what matters in our community. It's why we have to have great relationships with our municipalities and major organizations like your Association of Realtors or your local educational institutions or medical facilities, right? You have to have great relationships with these people. And so I'll tell you, we're a larger DMO. You know, we have a healthy budget, and so we're well resourced, but we have, you know, someone dedicated to directly to communicating with elected officials in those larger entities. That's a full-time position. We actually have 1.5 positions that's dedicated to that. So that's sort of our advocacy role. We have someone dedicated not just to public relations outside for visitors. We have an internal communications person that's focused on local media relations and stuff, but it's not enough. Like, we're adding another role now, which is someone that is going to be a community liaison, that is going to go to HOA board meetings, into Rotary clubs, and really share our vision, share our work, share our results, and listen. Most importantly, listen to the community, because we're here to serve the community, right? We shouldn't be operating in isolation. And so I think it's important. Now, I say all that and agree with you, but I think there's so many DMOs that aren't even there with the personas of the visitor. They're creating what they think of personas based on data that they're looking at, and they're not spending any time actually engaging and having conversation with the visitors themselves, right? Like, going on the street and talking to people and recording people and hearing, well, why do you choose Myrtle Beach? What brings you back here? How many times have you been here? What are the things that you love to do? Like, what are your perceptions? What's changed? What hasn't changed? Like, I think, you know, our mandate as a DMO is obviously to serve our community, but we do it through tourism. And so if we're not doing a great job promoting the destination, like, what I'm saying is, you got to find a balance, right? Because if you shift the pendulum too far towards focusing only on your internal stuff, in your local residents, in your local stakeholders, and all your energy is spent on the community, you're not doing your primary function, which is inviting visitors to come
Absolutely.
here. So I think you've got to sort of have a hierarchy of priorities here, and it starts with understanding the consumer first and making sure that those personas aren't, you know, they're heuristics that make it easier to market in batches. But you may lose sight of what you're really trying to do, because if you create a persona, it's usually an average of what's really happening. And when you're dealing with averages, sometimes you miss what's really happening. Because if I have half my constituents are on one side and half on the other, the average is in the middle. But if I target the middle, I'm not really talking to either, right? So you got to be careful with personas. So I agree with you again that we should be focused on our residents, and we should be targeting them and communicating with them. But you got to master the basics first, which is communicating the right way to your visitor.
And maybe I should have worded this more. You need an intentional strategy to treat your local community with the same value you put on the depth you go to understand your visitor. Right? Because we do a lot of work to understand who's coming, who we're targeting in our marketing campaigns. I don't think I see and of course your destination sounds like it's doing a great job, but I don't see a lot of that effort in the same vein as the marketing strategies that happen for visitors.
And you should have, going back to what we talked about earlier, you should have a budget for it. You should have, absolutely. And you may not can use restricted dollars. We don't, right? We generate our own unrestricted dollars to do it, but we have an annual budget that is internal local promotion. We have a campaign we call Tourism Works for the Grand Strand. That's the area, sort of the name of the region that we promote. And we'll run billboards, we'll run TV ads, we'll run promotions, but we'll also do the organic stuff. We'll be on the radio, we'll be on the TV, and we'll talk about the projects. And you know, it all sort of comes full circle, because when we've got projects like Traveling the Spectrum or Chef Swap, and we go on TV and talk about that and the benefit of that, it fosters this sense of excitement and appreciation for the community, right? And as a shared value of the community when they see that Myrtle Beach has a show on Peacock. So the things we're doing in tourism, if we share those in the right way through the right channels to our locals, it's sort of a double win, right? We're winning with the visitor, but we're also winning with the locals as well.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm trying hard to disagree with you, but it's hard because they're well thought out. What's your number five?
So the last one, and this one I think may kind of sum it all up really well, and that's build an industry your community can rely on. And I want to tell just a quick story. There's a guy that I hired this year, I guess last year now, because we're in the new year. His name's Matt Henson, and Matt was running a DMO in Alaska, a really rural DMO called Wrangell, Alaska. And he started out as a client and then eventually became someone that worked for us. But when I was talking to him in the interview process, I was asking him a little bit about what his experience had been like. And he talked about Wrangell, and he said, you know, at one point it was a logging community, and then the logging industry dried up here. And then it was a fishing community. And with a lot of the international fishing industries, it kind of crushed the fishing industry. And he said, my real goal was to build an industry in tourism that could actually sustain this community for the long term. And that was one of the more profound conversations that I've had in this space, because I feel like if every destination marketing professional looked at it that way, if all the other industries disappeared, have I built something that could sustain this community and provide longevity for this community? I can't think of a better measure of a successful destination marketer than that. And so I think as kind of a North Star for everybody, what do you need to do to build an industry that could support your community if all else failed?
Yeah. It's an interesting one. It's interesting you put that in your list, because it's not, you know, I guess it is, but it's not really the marketing, the normal thing you would think a marketer would be thinking about, right? And so at least a marketing agency would be thinking about. Now, Myrtle Beach is unique in that it is our industry, right? So if you look at a number one industry is tourism. If you look at our number two, three, and four, it's healthcare, it's real estate, and education. All three of which are derivatives of tourism, you know. So we actually have the opposite problem. We're trying to diversify, because if tourism went away, we'd be in a lot of trouble, which is why we were very aggressive coming out of COVID, and we continued to market when a lot of others didn't, and why we opened earlier than anyone else. Mm-hmm. And so we're actually trying to diversify. We're looking at things like the film industry and technology and high-end manufacturing. And we just got a subsea cable come in that's one of the fastest pipes to the internet on the East Coast. And so we're getting Google and Amazon and Meta and stuff coming in now. So we're definitely swinging the other way than you're encouraging folks. But I will say, you know, if we fast forward where things are going now, especially with technology shifts, especially with AI, right? We're on the cusp this year of agentic AI, where agents are going to be able to do very simple processes and replace mundane tasks, right? We've seen out of China now these automated robots that are $1,600 that can do a lot of basic manual function. And we're on the cusp of $16,000 humanoid robots that can do most of your housework and eventually most other things, right? That's less than a small car. That's affordable for an average household at some point. There are a lot of jobs that potentially, and a lot of industries that are going to be automated and are going to be not the way that humans spend their time. And whether we look at it on the simplest form as let's say autonomous vehicles, people are going to have a lot more time on their hands. Most likely humans are going to have a lot more time on their hands. And whenever that's happened through the industrial revolution, through mechanization of anything, when humans have more time on their hands, they tend to spend it two ways. One is consuming media and the other is leisure. Right. So travel is one of those things. And so I think more of a percentage of our disposable income, and we've seen this trend, is going to get shifted towards travel. And so I think the opportunity to monetize travel is going to continue to grow. And so people are going to want to have more diverse experiences. They're going to have the ability to research more diverse experiences. And so I think there is an opportunity for backhaul places to create a sustainable tourism community that maybe they couldn't in the past. So I think it's an opportunity for sure, but it does take, it's not a DMO sole job, right? To create that. It's going to take alignment through the whole community, because the community's got to get on board with having strangers come into their backyard. In a place like Myrtle Beach that was built from the beginning as a tourist destination, that's easy. Everyone that moves here understands what you're moving into. But people don't always like progress. Like I'll give you an example where this past year we did a campaign to get a penny sales tax renewed for fixing Horry County roads. It's the county we live in. And there were people opposed to it. And when we started engaging them and saying, well, why are you opposed? This is progress. A lot of the folks opposed to it lived in the backwaters inland, and they lived on dirt roads. And part of the proposal for the penny sales tax was to pave dirt roads. And they said, I don't want my road paved. I like living on a dirt road because it means less traffic. It means people leave me alone, and that's what I want. And so I think, I said this many times on the show, and I'm sure I'll say it many times again, when you invent the ship, you invent the shipwreck. And so when you invite more tourism, there's unintended consequences always. And you've got to be prepared for what those are and engage the people that are going to have those concerns before they rear their ugly head. So that's my
Well,
take.
and I think all of your kind of counterpoints made a lot of sense. I to kind of tie it all together, the reason I gave these resolutions kind of in this order is one builds on top of the other, right? And I really believe that if you do all of these things, you're building a sustainable organization that's going to be able to support the community for the long term. But you can't build an industry your community can rely on without being a cathedral builder, right? And so, like, all this engagement of the community, things like that that we talked earlier, kind of rolls up to a if you do your job really, really well, you really can have an impact on the long-term sustainability of the community, which is the ultimate goal. But you're right, you can't do it yourself. And so you've got to take these other steps too. But I don't know. I think 2025 is going to be a year of change in the destination marketing industry. And I'm really excited to be here, be a part of it and watch it. And I think it's going to be crazy and in a good way. Like, I think there's going to be a lot of change, and I think we're going to have a lot of interesting problems to solve, but that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think we're very optimistic and excited about 2025, and across the board, the change that's coming is mostly positive, but there are going to be unintended consequences. And I think the savvy DMOs are the ones that are paying attention in following the trends and following what's happening and talking to smart people and obviously listening to this show, because anyone listening, your mom is definitely smart because she listens to this show. But we got to stay on. The one thing I will say that I know with more confidence than anything else is if we do the same thing this year that we've been doing for 10 years, our chances of being obsolete are going to grow precipitously this year. This is the year when media sh consumption shifts, consumer behavior shifts, technology shifts, perception shifts, governmental shifts are all going to sort of hit at the same time. And we've got this sort of unknown of the new administration in the US, especially, that we don't know what impact that's going to have, right? And so there's going to be a lot of changes, and we've got to be ready to adapt to those changes. Myrtle Beach is ready, and hopefully the folks listening to this are ready as well. But Adam, this
Brand
is a good
Revolt is
show,
ready.
man. Brand Revolt is ready too. Adam, if
Absolutely.
this has been great, we're going to try to be less self-indulgent next episode, right? Less about Adam, maybe more about me, maybe more
More
about someone
Stewart,
else.
more
Yeah,
cowbell.
that's what we got to have. We got to have more cowbell. I've been called worse than a cowbell, I'll be honest. Adam, if they want to reach out to you, you want to give them your new email address for the first time?
thebrandrevolt.com.
Great. Adam is definitely revolting, and you guys can reach out to him there. And you can reach out to me, Stuart.butler at visitmodelbeach.com, or hit me up on LinkedIn, and please subscribe to this show. Leave a comment. And if you want to come on the show, reach out to one of us and let us know if you have a topic, if you have different resolutions, if you have resolutions, or you have ideas that you disagree or agree with some of the stuff that we talked about today. This is a platform for the community to come and have discourse and debate and agree and disagree. And so we'd love to have you on in 2025. You know, even if you don't think, we had someone come on recently that said they didn't feel like they were ready to be on this show, because the people we've had on were like the pioneers and these big names in the industry. We want everyone, right? Your opinion is as valuable as anyone else's. So please come on the show, share your opinion, and we promise we'll be nicer to you than we are to each other. That's the promise we have to you in 2025. But until next time, guys, thank you for listening. This has been Destination Discourse.
I'll be a few minutes late to that. I've got a fire I've got to put out real quick.